Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this week's Tillage Podcast. I'm Siobhan Walsh, recording on Wednesday afternoon. It's the 28th of February for your records later on. Coming up on this week's show, we talk about a potential 20,000 hectare drop in tillage area. We have an update on the tree crop rule. We look at the costs and returns of tillage crops, chat to Maria O'Toole of Tierlawn on the oats situation, and we catch up with Diageo's David O'Hagan as well. As always, we'll have the grain market and weather reports at the end of the show. But first up, that story on page 4 of the paper this week. So, tillage, the seed trade and the tillage industry are saying that they're predicting that there could be at least a 20,000 hectare drop in tillage area in 2024. And that drop could increase to as much as 30,000 hectares. So these figures, we've heard a lot this year about a potential seed shortage, and that seed shortage was estimated to be as much as 35,000 hectares. And now as the season goes on, I suppose as land rental agreements come up, as you know, the weather continues to, you know, wet weather continues and grain prices go down, it looks like we no longer have much of a seed shortage in this country. And unfortunately, that looks like it's because there isn't an appetite to sow crops. Our land has been lost from the sector. So the seed trade and the industry are putting that decline in tillage area at between 20 and 30,000 hectares. And certainly, you know, from talking to farmers, from talking to the trade, there is a lot of land going out of tillage in certain parts of the country. I wasn't at the IFA meeting in Cork the other night, but certainly farmers in that region being hit very badly in the land rental market as dairy farmers in that area try and hold on to their cow numbers and get land in order to overcome the problem of the derogation stocking rate limit going down to 220 kgs per hectare. The wet weather then is not helping. People, I suppose, are looking out as they look out and the weather is get, you know, the fields aren't drying up. They're looking at grain prices now of €175 per tonne green for harvest. We don't know that those prices will end up there at harvest. They could be much higher. We don't know what's going to happen between now and then, but certainly that's in people's minds as well. Then in other parts of the country, you know, I'm talking to people, you know, take Wexford, for example, a heavy tillage county, and that decrease doesn't seem to be coming there at all. So hopefully that stays that way. But this is all, you know, at a time when the government has a climate action plan to increase tillage area by over 50,000 hectares to bring it to 400,000 hectares by 2030. So we have to increase by 50,000 hectares. And at the minute, in 1 year, we're talking about a decrease of 20,000 hectares. Something's wrong there. The minister, of course, set up the Food Vision Tillage Group to give him proposals to try and help the tillage area and to increase the tillage area. That group was announced last March, met for the first time in May. And a year on, the minister will get that report. So submissions were due on the final draft of the report on the 28th of February, that's Wednesday. There will be a final meeting on the 6th of March, and the report is to be handed to the minister by the 15th of March. In that report, look, the most important thing, top of the list on that report, is a payment for tillage. And certainly now industry and farm organisations saying that, you know, a payment needs to come, and industry saying that payment doesn't need strings attached. Tillage farmers are doing enough for the environment at the minute. And farm org saying you want to increase the area of organics and forestry. This is happening through payment, and the same needs to happen through tillage, for tillage as well. Look, that story is on page four of the paper. And I suppose tied to that story then is the derogation from the True Crop Rule. Farmers still very angry that no word has come on this derogation. People trying to sort seed and decide what their cropping plans are. So at the minute, this is where we understand that it stands. So basically the EU are going to reject that request for a derogation from the True Crop Rule, because there's a legal requirement there. There have been two derogations granted in a row, and they say that you're legally not allowed to give a third. However, it looks like the Minister for Agriculture can use force majeure and give flexibility on that True Crop Rule, or the Two Crop Rule, whichever applies to you. The Minister can use force majeure and give flexibility here in Ireland if he wants. That's the way the Irish Farmers Journal understands it. Some good news coming, well, maybe it depends on what way you look at it, but the Council of Ministers met at the start of this week. And in that meeting, there's reports that, you know, there's a midterm review of the CAP in 2025, and there's reports that the crop diversification and rotation rules are too complex, and that there needs to be more flexibility in those rules, and certainly they need to take account of the regional differences across the EU as well. So maybe positive news there. Look, the True Crop Rule is a good thing, but not in a year where weather has been bad, where farmers have struggled to plant their crops, and where they're struggling to meet their requirements through no fault of their own. But look, a decision needed on that, an announcement needed from the department and the minister on that immediately. Thankfully, weather is starting to dry up, and hopefully people will be out to the fields as soon as they can. On the tillage pages this week, we have the cost and returns from Chagas detailed. There's a lot of tables on that page this week, a lot of figures, but really important to look at them, to do your own costs. We've also adjusted the Chagas figures to take into account lower fertiliser prices and lower grain prices. So just make sure you know what tables you're looking at when you're doing them. But put in your own costs and see where you're at. Like, you will have different costs to the Chagas ones. Maybe your machinery costs will be cheaper, or, you know, your different interest rates or your transport, things like that are all going to change. But look at the tillage pages this week. They're honest and essential to take note of. Now, I think we'll go to Maria O'Toole of Tierlan next. So I chatted to Maria at the Tierlan Grain Awards last week, and here's what she had to say on the gluten-free oat situation. Maria, thanks for joining us. You're in charge of grain quality at Tierlan, and we're at the Grain Quality Awards. A great day to have to reward growers and acknowledge the work that goes in.
Yes, absolutely. It's always great to have the growers here, and they like to be recognised because they're putting in the hard work year in, year out, and it's great to stand up and in front of people be rewarded for what they've done.
Yeah, Maria, we've just done a tour of the oat mill, and that's obviously something you're heavily involved in sourcing oats and making sure that the quality is important. From what Dermot was telling us in the mill, there's great growth in the market and plenty of room for expansion.
Yeah, absolutely. Over the last couple of years in particular, we're at maximum capacity in our storage, and then with the oat mill in production, which is great. And it's great for farmers because we've been promising this year in, year out, and thankfully the markets now are improving. We're diversifying with our product range, which is also helping.
Yeah.
And it's a premium product for a farmer on their farm, which is what it's all about.
Yeah, exactly. It's adding another bit of income onto the farm, but also if you're growing the oats, you need a rotational crop. So, you know, maybe you had beans last year, you got the protein payment, maybe did quite well out of the beans, got a good price. And I know like Tierlan had a fixed price for beans, and then you get to go into your premium crop of oats. So a good opportunity for people.
Oh, absolutely. And the guys that are involved, the growers that we have, in fairness, are a dedicated bunch of growers, and they're with us year in, year out. They're planning not just 1 year ahead, they're planning the 4 year ahead because of the rotation of oats. And then, like you said, it's the crop that's previous to it. So, yes, it works hand in hand. And luckily, we can take the beans as well, which works well for us as well. And we actually, beans is one of the better crops to follow with gluten-free.
Okay. Did you double the area you had of, or you doubled your production of gluten-free oats last year, was it?
Almost doubled our production, So it was like in a very difficult year. It was a struggle. Unfortunately, we ended up with more spring acres. This year is looking actually quite similar. Yeah. But we did meet the tonnage requirement, which was very good. And quality of oats across all areas, because of such a broad area that we're working in, was very good, which is rewarding too.
In a year like 23, that's... You know, I suppose the spread helped there then to get that quality. Is there room for expansion then? Like, have you got your requirement of spring acres now this year, Maria, or do you need more?
No, we're okay for this year. Because of the way the autumn worked out, we had to carry forward a lot of growers. Just they didn't get the crops in. We've also had crops that are going to have to be re-sown, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And on top of that, then we have the seed shortage.
Yeah.
No imported seed with the oats. Mm-hmm. So it just means what oat seed we have, we need to use, but we won't be able to expand any further on that.
John Keeley said in the mill there, when, you know, Dermot was talking about plenty of room for expansion in markets. And he said, you know, if that expansion does come, it will come from Ireland. So you'll just expand out the areas where you're growing in.
Absolutely, yeah. We're always looking to expand in the areas, and we have moved into a lot of areas that we weren't in, which is great. And it has proven, because we can spread the workload at harvest time as well, and you're securing your supply.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Maria. Great to hear the progress.
Okay, thank you, Siobhan.
Thanks very much to Maria for joining us. And good to see that gluten-free oats market possibly getting bigger. Now, I think we'll move on now. And back in January, I spoke to David Hagen of Diageo. And David, of course, is involved in the sustainability scheme, or the regenerative agriculture program with Guinness, which we've heard about before, and which we saw results coming out on the carbon footprint from. So I sat down with David back in January. So here's what he had to say.
David, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast this week. You might describe for our listeners what you do in Diageo.
Thanks very much for having me, Siobhan. Pleasure to be here. So I work for Diageo, and my job, I'm the regenerative agricultural manager. And look, my job is liaising with our stakeholders and suppliers and the growers in the Guinness Barley Sustainability Project. So it's about, this is a very scientific project. We put in very robust baselines. So it's about working this, making sure the science comes true, and then working with our suppliers, our consultants, and the third party contractors on that.
Okay, and you started your role last year, did you? So it's quite a new area for Guinness, I suppose, to go into.
Yeah, well, it was May 22, so we're sort of coming up. For me, it's coming up on a 2 year anniversary. So, okay. Look, it's a new area for Guinness, or for Diageo. Regenerative agriculture and our scope 3 is very important to us. And I suppose that's bore out with Diageo employing someone like me.
Okay, yeah. So about the programme then, David, and we would have had some of the farmers from the programme in the paper or maybe on the podcast from time to time, telling us about the different things they were doing, like planting cover crops and that kind of thing. So there's 44 farms. So maybe just tell us a little bit about the programme.
Yeah, I suppose then maybe just to recap, this is a regenerative agricultural pilot. So look, and what we're trying to do that, like, mimic nature as best we can. And look, it's about maybe putting say more in that's coming out, and look, mainly based around soil, so less disturbance, armoring the soil, the biology, and that's where your cover crops come in, and then diversity stemming from the soil across the farm. So we have 44 farmers on the pilot, and look, they all come from our suppliers, which are Burt Malt, Tierlon, Cooney Furlong, and Comix McKinnon. So we work very much hand in glove with our suppliers, and we're very grateful for that. In terms of, we did a lot of baselining, and a lot of baselining in our first year, we did a lot of baselining around soil, mainly looking at maybe nutrients and carbon. So like, to give you maybe a few of the stats around that, for argument's sake. So like, from a nutrient point of view, on average now across our farms, like, our P levels are index 2, a high index 2 actually, and our K levels are coming in, our potassium levels are coming in index 3. If you look,
so that's average across the farms, the 44 farms.
Across the 44 farms. So look, okay. You can see growers are doing a great job. Like the traditional husbandry that's endemic within Irish grain growing is there to be sorted out. Again, this is borne out in the carbon figures as well. So like we looked at, say, total carbon stocks, and then we looked at active carbon stocks. So like in our total carbon stocks, again, the average across the 44 farms is 104 ton of CO2 equivalents in the top 30 centimetres. And again, and sort of looking at on the active carbon and maybe getting into the biology, like we found a figure of 5.4 milligrams per litre. This is high. So again, what that is indicating is there's good biological activity in the soil. And again, we did another test on biological activity, which is respiration.
Okay, and again, the burst test. Yeah, the Solvita burst test. Okay.
Solvita burst test. And again, this is at the high level. So we're starting from a very high base.
Okay.
And that's a great thing. That's a great thing to see. Back to maybe Regen Ag. And the other thing we did then is, look, we have been, for farmers and growers in the program, they've been getting cover crop seed for the last 2 years. And what we've been doing is measuring the biomass on those. So for our, look, in terms of tonnages, like in 2002, we had an average 6.5 ton of biomass per hectare grown. Okay. When we went back and measured that again this year, now obviously we're down a little bit. Not that much, surprisingly. Okay. Now actually it's 5.7 tons of dry matter per hectare this year. But what it would actually, when you do look at the data in that, anything that got in early behind that winter barley slot, there's some ferocious crops there. And in all fairness, down to somewhere behind late spring barley that didn't take it all. So like that's the range. There's a bigger range this year, but we're surprised by the 5.7 figure. And again, but like the interesting thing about that now, and again, with water quality being topical and things like that, like on average, like both years, actually the uptake on a dry matter basis now has been very similar, around 28 kilos of N, 3 kilos of P, and 26 kilos of K. So that's sort of ringing true again next year. So like, again, it's pulling up a nice amount of nutrient that has the potential maybe to be lost during the winter where stubble isn't covered. So that's a very good result. But look, I think the big thing out of this is we're starting from a good base.
Yeah, that's they're really good results, David. I'm going to backtrack a little bit, just because you mentioned total and active carbon. You might describe that for people listening, the difference between them.
So total carbon is basically all the carbon in the soil. And sorry, this is down to 30 centimetres. And actually, what we went deeper, and I can explain that in a minute too. So we went down a metre into the soil profile. Mm. So it's the total. And the active carbon is the bit that the biology are recycling. So it's a sort of like, so we add a cover crop to the soil and the bacteria and the fungi start breaking that down. That's the active carbon bit.
Yeah.
And so that's as a percentage of your total. But again, that's a high figure. It sort of shows you how much it'll be a proxy for how much biology is in your soil and how active they are. So it's a very good measure. Then maybe I'll just elaborate a bit more on the carbon sampling.
Yeah, different depths, yeah.
Yeah, so we used a company called AgriCarbon, and they could take a core down to a metre.
Yeah.
Look, what we're doing is then we split that core up 0 to 15 centimetres, 15 to 30, 30 to 50, and then 50 and below. Look, the reason we wanted to use the state of the art and what was the best available technology to us, if you look at the research around carbon and carbon dynamics in soil, the opportunity maybe is to get carbon down the profile. So that's why we wanted to measure that and look again, what are the opportunities there for your cover crop, longer roots, etc., getting and depositing that carbon down the soil. So that's how we went there, and looking forward to seeing maybe what the results of that will be.
And main methods then, David, of trying to increase that carbon, is the cover crop the main method, or you know, is crop rotation, is there any organic manures in it, and I suppose how are you helping the farmers to increase that carbon, what are you doing?
Yeah, well, to date, our main method has been the cover crops and introducing cover crops. And thanks to Robbie Byrne and Precision Nutrition here, he's doing Trojan work with our suppliers and the growers there in this. So,
he's advice for the farmers. He provides the advice. Yeah,
exactly. He's our technical agronomers. And look, again, we also then rely heavily on the agronomy teams within our suppliers as well.
Companies, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is definitely a joint venture and leaning on them for the agronomy. But yeah, like, so it's using the cover crops. But again, when there's access to organic manures, if growers are able to come in and graze off their cover crops, I know that's changed a little bit this year now with the new the new acre scheme and things like that now. But like, it's what we like to say maybe is it's using the best of the traditional practices that we know works, and how do we augment them with new practices and new measurements. So that's what we're working on, really. Like, it's the whole idea of this pilot is let's see, like it's about the measurement and coming back to it and having specific data on it. And to be so, we've trialed a number of ways of doing things, and to be definitive, to be able to say this A, B, C works, or, and again, maybe A, B, C works in Wexford and C and B work better in Leash. So,
okay.
So that's
really good that the farmers are getting advice as they go along in the programme as well. Then he published emissions in that report last March. So this was from the 2022 year, wasn't it, David? So you said that spring malt and barley, a tonne of spring malt and barley was producing about 165 kgs of carbon dioxide equivalents.
That's what we measured in 2002, that we got 165 kg of CO2 equivalent. So again, like, suppose it's a
I'll
very
just put
good,
that into context. So that's context. So in 2022, the average yield was 3.3 tonnes per acre. So it's about 550 kgs per acre, or 1.3 tonne per hectare, just so people kind of have figures in their head.
Yeah.
So how did you measure those emissions, David?
So working through our suppliers there, we got the data, and the data was put through the Cool Farm tool to give us that measurement.
Okay.
So that was it.
That's a handy tool. People can access that. I think you can use that for free on you can have a trial. You can do up to 5 of them, I think, for free. So people listening could play around with that themselves. You know, you don't have to be in a program to use it.
No, absolutely not. Like, you just need to sign up. Say you're a farmer, and like, there's a world of information in it. And what I actually like about it is you can start to do what ifs. You can play with your figures, and you know what I mean. And it'll give you the data back thing. So it's like that. Well, I know the weather's drying up a bit now. So, but like, if you have a rainy afternoon, it's a good exercise.
Yeah, and why did you settle on that tool? I know that tool is widely used, but there's so many tools out there to use. So why was that the one that you settled on?
Probably for the reason you just said, Siobhan, that it's widely used, so that we can compare now. But like, look, what we're doing is, and like, again, working with our data management partner, like, we have the data sort of there that we can use the data into another tool if we want to, and things like that. Like, so look, Cool Farm tool is used because it's widely used probably within the food industry. Okay. So that's why we went there. But look, not saying, just not ruling any other tool in or out.
And the goal of the project then, so you've measured those emissions, you know what carbon dioxide equivalents you're producing per tonne. You want to reduce those emissions now. I think the aim is by 30%. So how are you going to go about that? What else are you going to implement on the farm to reduce the emissions as opposed to offset the carbon?
Yeah. Look, so the big thing that showed up in the doing those greenhouse gas emissions is 75%, approximately 75% of the footprint is related to nitrogen.
Okay.
So there's a big opportunity there now. So again, like, looking at the Chagas MAC curves and the Signpost Farms, like, look, protected urea, and look, there's even new technologies. Look, there's more abatement technologies coming along for the fertilizers. There's green ammonia and other things like that. So look, there is a big play around nitrogen fertilizers, and we're definitely looking at that. Look, the idea, the using of the cover crops and the recycling of the nutrients in the ground, like that, again, working with Precision Nutrition there and our suppliers, like, can we eke out a reduction in the nitrogen fertilizer going in and things like that. Look,
yeah,
there's a great saying out there that you earn the right to use less nitrogen. It just does so. Like there's that end of it too. Like that's a part of our trials program is what can we do with that and where can we go on that. Like it's we need to be very sure that yeah, maybe you can reduce by a few percent on your nitrogen and your yield maintains and your quality maintains.
Okay, so I suppose protected urea, still a bit of research to be done around that. I think we could do it more research on that. I think people, tillage farmers are generally slow to take it up.
Yeah, I think it's a big opportunity to be there. I think the research has to be done, and I think that's what we're trying to do is that, and to demonstrate it works and that it's good to use. But like, I think the positive of all that, like there are options there and or things like that. Like if we were the other way around now and we're looking, what could we do? At least we have a good few options on the table. And again, when nitrogen is such a big part of the carbon footprint, that can have a big play and have a big and like what I like about working to say a nitrogen or fertilizer around fertilizer, we all have the equipment on our farms. You know what I mean? Like it's something we know that's how true. To use and things like that. Like so it's the cost of switching, if you wanted to call it that way, is low. It's so things like that. But there is further research required, I would agree on it.
Yeah, you don't have to buy a new drill or whatever. Is there a good mix within the farmers of plough, mintill, direct drill, that kind of thing?
Yeah, like so there is. Like there's some growers in the program there, and like tell you, we're learning off them. They're like that. They're so ahead in what they do and what they do. But yeah, look, there is direct drilling, mintill, and then there's the plough and one pass system. But again, like this isn't like. This isn't maybe to borrow the George Orwell quote, non-inversion good and ploughing bad. Like systems work, and like again, like and maybe go back to that carbon data. Like we have good levels of carbon in Ireland due to our geography, our climate, and things like that. So like this, like how do we cover crops in a plough-based system is still going to be benefit to the soil and benefit the carbon in the soil. So it's not a case of like it's all these things are going to do good. So it's just a matter of maybe how much good are they doing and how do we measure that?
Yeah. And are there, I think you were going to do other measures. Maybe that's still in the pipeline. Are you know, things to do with biodiversity and that kind of thing?
Yeah. And look, so we have started and we're going to expand this year. So like, so what we've done is, and actually I was listening to your podcast there last week, so you better sit a punch on the boards. We've gone and used them. We have a supplier called Chirp, and they use, what we've done differently is we've used AI enabled bird listening devices on farms. You don't need a person to go out and spot them, that the device is able to pick them up. So we did that across a number of farms, and look, but actually similar enough, like on average now, look, the difference, I suppose, in our was we did it at the end of the nesting season, and so it was a summer survey. Okay. But we got an average 28 species across the farms. But
oh my God.
And again, the very nice thing was 30% of them are on the conservation list. And okay. And again, so like what I thought, look, you're having yellowhammers, dunnocks, tree creepers, and on two of the farms, we had kingfishers.
Oh my gosh.
So kingfisher showed up and woodpeppers. So like,
woodpeckers, again, what part of the country? I know I'm being hard on you. You mightn't remember.
Look, it was Kildare, Leash, Leash and down into Wexford. Oh, that's it. You can't beat a bit of a biodiversity down in Leash. But the serious side of this, and maybe again, the aim of the pilot, like is scientific. This is throwing up data that adds to the public discourse and look, allows agriculture, I suppose, to augment that that public discourse with proven results-based data and show, well, actually, this is what we're doing. Again, look, take these into context or baselines, and we want to improve on these, but at least we know where we're starting from. The other thing that we did on biodiversity too, Siobhan, was we actually measuring bees as well. Same principle of using device and AI-powered devices to measure bees. And look, what we did is we deployed them along. Where do bees want to be on farm? basic. Do you know what I mean? That from that point of view.
Very good.
So along hedgerows, along maybe the semi-natural places in the corners and things like that. So and look, we want to expand them out this year. We'll be expanding them out this year. And the other thing we'll be doing this year too is we work with Farmoy. And Farmoy, they've very good capabilities in remote monitoring. So for the farms on the pilot, look at what habitats, so what physical habitats are there and maybe what percentage they are. And then the other thing that Farmoy can do is we can look at the water, we can use the EPA data in the locality around the farm to look at the water quality and things like that. So look, just pulling all that data together, making it visual, and again, what gets measured gets managed. So when we know, when you know what's around you and you know your water quality, then look, it's our baseline, but the interventions we put on, then will we see a result? And look, you have to take this with water quality, there's always going to be a lag. So, but we know where we started from.
So you might be able to, with those maps, you might be able to find a critical source area for loss on the farm and maybe plant a hedge in the way of that loss or put an arable margin in place or something like that.
Yeah, well, I suppose, look, and that's the thing. At the moment, like when you look at the critical source areas for phosphorus, and they're very good maps, like, yeah, like it allows for a better discussion between the agronomist, the farm thing, like, and say, what is the best to do here? And what is the best way to manage this bit of land?
Yeah. So there's loads going on, David. So a lot of work for the farmer. What's in it for the farmer and what's in it for Diageo?
Yeah, well, look, it's very much a joint effort. But look, I suppose from the farmer and the grower point of view, there's more data and more. So like you can know your starting point. And you made the point maybe there earlier on about like there's different growers on the pilot, and some of them are very good, and they are very good. But maybe the issue that some of them might be running into is that they've no baselines to show how good they've improved.
Okay.
So I suppose the one thing back to being scientific is a baseline and know where your farm is and where you've gone off that baseline. Look, I suppose the other thing then to remember is like this is year two out of year three. So until we get year three data, it's probably premature to comment on where the thing is. What we want to I suppose sit down with our stakeholders and sit down with the data and actually what did happen, and then maybe how do we work from there. Look, from a Diageo point of view, look, raw materials is material to Diageo. I suppose raw material probably represents about one third of our scope 3 carbon emissions, and just to scope 3 would be what happens, say, to all the barley that we bought in the production of all the barley that, say, comes to James's Gate. So that's the thing, and it's not just about carbon either, water quality, biodiversity. And I suppose that's from a Diageo point of view, agriculture is quite unique in that we can talk about carbon, we can talk about biodiversity, we can talk about water quality, and there's also social sustainability in there as well. So it's an area that impacts on a lot, and that's why we are focusing and majoring on it so much.
Do you see people maybe down the line getting rewarded for biodiversity or being paid for carbon? And I know people, like, you're still getting the results, so there might be no carbon to be paid for. You know, the balance might say, well, you're actually emitting as much as you're storing. But down the line, you know, and we see there's some of the banks and financial institutions are paying people for biodiversity habitats. Is that somewhere along the pipeline?
Yeah, well, look, from our point of view, and again, I suppose, one, I'll go back to that, look, we want to see what the results of the pilot are first. It's premature to say what thing for the point you just made. And also the other thing too, look, the legislation, there's legislations coming out of Europe and Ireland
up
for this year.
Carbon.
So on that. So like until you have a view of them, again, it's just it's too premature to say what would be what, and not knowing what the results will be next year.
Yeah, but it won't be linked to the price of their barley. The price is still going to be determined by whoever purchases their barley, whether it be Bort Malt or Tierlan or whoever it is.
No, like, I don't know. Like, it's it'll be business as usual on that side of the business. Like,
yeah, okay. And the pilot, so has the pilot started in any other country, David?
Again, we're looking at other geographies around the world. So again, like, source a lot of grain in the UK, and then we are, I think, Mexico as well. We are looking at again, different crop agave, but there's a pilot getting going over there too. But again, all the principles are fairly well the same. Like, again, we're baselining and working with state-of-the-art technology and the best local intelligence and with our suppliers we can get.
Okay. Well, listen, David, it's been great to hear about the project. Loads going on in it. We hope to look as you publish more results, we'll publish it to our readers wherever we can, and sure, we'll come across some of the farmers throughout the year as well.
Absolutely. No, and look, it's a continuous process, and look, we're very happy to be producing these results and sharing them with the industry, and we're always looking for feedback. We had a discussion here today or the other day, and the word came up that every day is a school day. Look, this is about collaboration and collaborating with the industry and yourselves. And looking forward to speaking to you again on Siobhan.
Thanks very much, David.
Thanks, Siobhan.
Thanks very much to David for joining us. Great to get an update on that programme. And look, we'll keep you all up to date on that programme as well as time goes on. I know the Guinness or the Diageo, the Malt and Barley Awards with Bortmalt are on next week. So we'll give you the winner of those next week as well. Right, we'll move to grain markets now. And look, grain markets were looking a little bit more positive this week than they were last week. So that's a plus. So here is my file here. So yeah, Matif wheat finished last week looked much the same as where it was last week. It was up 50 cent. But then this week increased by €3 per tonne to Tuesday. So it finished on Tuesday evening at €212 per tonne. Maize also lifted slightly. Oilseed rape, unfortunately, went down. But increased again this week. So oilseed rape fell from 429.25 to 415.25 last week, but it bounced back up to 420.50 on Tuesday evening this week. Oilseed rape, you know, soybeans are kind of playing into the oilseed rape market, it looks like, and there's, you know, Brazil are harvesting away, and while we heard reports from Brazil of poor weather affecting soybeans, there's still a big crop coming out of Brazil and South America. Argentina have pulled back their production estimates slightly, but US stocks are reported to be up and demand down from China, so that's all playing into the oilseed rape market. At home then, we're looking at prices of around 205 for barley in November and 220 for wheat are under those prices, unfortunately. Malting barley this week, that Sebastian malting barley price for 2024 was at 241 this week, so that was slightly up, and we're still waiting on Bortmalt to confirm the dates for harvest averaging to start, so that they're meant to be from the middle of April to the middle of September, so presumably they're not going to change on that. So that's a quick rundown on grain markets for this week. And if I go to the weather, I have the weather forecast in from Met Éireann. And so Friday, a cold start to March and meteorological spring, they say, with sunny spells and showers on Friday. The showers merging to longer spells of rain in places, and some of the showers turning increasingly wintry in nature. I know there's meant to be frost, I think, on Friday night as well. Yeah, so -1 to +3 degrees over Friday night. Saturday will continue cold with sunny spells and showers. Some showers heavy and falling as hail with some sleet over the mountains, temperatures of 4 to 8 degrees, and overnight -1 to +3 degrees. Sunday, a bright day, sunny spells and showers again. A few isolated showers on Sunday, and highest temperatures of 6 to 8, and temperatures on Sunday night -2 to 2 degrees. So we all need to have the antifreeze in the sprayer, especially if you've been out spraying, lucky enough to get out in the last few days or last week. And then the outlook for Monday to Wednesday, a band of rain will continue to move up from the south on Monday and introduce some milder air, but it will remain unsettled for Tuesday and Wednesday, with rain persistent at times, with temperatures around average or a little above. And if I look at the rainfall chart, yeah, the weekend looks nearly to be the driest on Saturday and Sunday. There's kind of ones, twos and threes, whereas you go into Monday and you're at 10 mils, 14 mils, 11 mils and 6 mils in the Midlands. So that's the weather forecast for this week. Look, get your seed orders in, get your fertilizer ordered, especially, you know, your compounds and your few bits of nitrogen that you're going to need for your winter cereals. Get as much done as you can before the rush comes on. I know some people will be moving on beans, and look, wait for ground conditions to be good. I know it's very hard to wait, but try and wait for fields to dry out properly before going out and planting crops. There's going to be a busy time ahead, and the most important thing that everyone can do is try and stay safe and take a minute to think about everything you're doing and make sure it's safe to do so. Hopefully the weather picks up and we'll get going soon. Thanks to you all for listening. Thanks to Claire and Jerome back at base for editing. Thanks to our guests, to Maria and to David Hagen. And until next week, stay safe and keep the tillage flag flying.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.